The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
There's going to be a style of play that we are known for. And it's going to involve effort. And it's going to involve being relentless. It's going to involve being smart. And we're going to keep guys to that, because that's how you sustain being good for a long time. There's a lot of good players in that clubhouse and down below. And I love competition. And the last thing you want to do when you're in competition is open up a window.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined today, reunited once again with St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Ben Fredrickson. So, Ben, what do we make of this? Swept by Atlanta, the manager and an outfielder are disputing the effort level on what could have been a pivotal run. And, oh, by the way, a 20-year-old hit a home run, his first major league home run, top prospect, is with the team, has a hit in every one of his games, and got his first home run against his boyhood team. Where do you want to start?
Well, preferably with the drama and something negative, because that's just mostly my style. Sorry, Jordan Walker, you're down ballot today. No, I just think this is the first, official opening of the Cardinals season, really. I mean, yeah, the Clydesdales, the Red Jackets, that's all nice. The pomp and circumstance, the first pitch, Scott Rowland, good job and all that. But it's not really a Cardinals baseball season until there's some sort of club
drama,
controversy, internal drama that splits the fan base entirely into a pro-con argument. And every now move that will happen with Tyler O'Neill and Ollie Marmol for the next, 2 weeks will be over-scrutinized and over-analyzed. And now it's officially Cardinals baseball season. So
I thought the fan base couldn't have something so polarizing unless Jeff Albert was involved. Did I miss a memo?
Well, he's out of here. Now we got to focus on other things. Like, Paul DeJong gets to take the day off, and now this can be the focus. But look, I don't mean to sound, sound shallow about this. It's clearly something that is going to be a big topic, but I think we have to start with what's going on with Ollie and Tyler O'Neill. It's certainly the most buzzy thing around the team right now. Not to be forgotten is the fact that the starting pitching is not doing a good job, which is a huge question mark for this team, and we talked about it a lot this offseason, a lot this spring training. We feel like it's all we talk about, and here they are now, two series in, and they're getting clubbed by postseason caliber lineups, and that's not to be overlooked. But the big news, I think, is right now is Tyler and Ollie and people's reaction to it. Here's my reaction. I think the Cardinals have done a lot to try to prepare Tyler O'Neill for what they hope is a big season. I think that they have really talked him up in terms of all the great things he could do this year. They've cleared out center field for him to get an opportunity to prove he can be that guy. And I think they were seeing things early in this season that didn't look like the kind of player Tyler O'Neill should be. An elite, speed, athletic player who plays all out. And Ollie is not going to not call that out when he sees it. The example was the base running thing. He just didn't look right. He looked like he was in a lower gear than usual. And it's not a player's decision to question whether or not they should be sent home by the third base coach. If they're told to go, they should go, and they should be going hard. And I think Ollie has been seeing some things that he wanted to address head on. He addressed him with Tyler O'Neill, and we know how Ollie works. He's going to address him with the player, and then he's probably going to be candid about what he and the player talked about. So I don't think that's a huge deal, but I think O'Neill's responses to it is making it somewhat interesting. We've seen this happen with other players. Usually last time was with Harrison Bader, and he says, oh, yeah, that was right. I need to be better there. And everybody moved on. Tyler O'Neill took a little offense to it, and now we see how it plays out. But as with anything, we're going to see how it plays out on the field. And I think the one thing that it underscores is this outfield competition, which didn't really get a lot of action in spring because the World Baseball Classic took both Newt Barr and O'Neill away. It's very much active right now, and Ollie just opened the door up wide again to everybody who wants to get in on it.
A quick note is we're recording this after the Cardinals lose the third game of a series to Atlanta. It was a day game, so you're going to hear ballpark sounds in the background here as we record, but this is not pregame. We are recording this after the Cardinals-Atlanta game. What is your feel on whether or not of how this was handled? A lot of times, you know, fans demand accountability. And then when they see it in this regard, fans and media, let me put it that way, fans and media, you know, they ask for accountability, candidness, clarity, all that. And then sometimes I've seen when it's handled this way, transparent, accountability, candid, bluntness, they go, oh, that should have been kept indoors. What's your feel on that?
I mean, a manager's going to get ripped no matter which way he plays that. I can remember Mike Shildt getting ripped for being too soft on his players and his public comments, and why is he glossing over things? Why isn't he holding these guys accountable publicly? These guys can take it. They know when they're struggling. Why doesn't he just say they're struggling? And he would get killed for that. And now Ollie's going to get killed for being direct and blunt about why he's frustrated with Tyler O'Neill. I think the most important thing to point out here is that Ollie doesn't share that stuff unless he has talked to the guy first. Tyler can be upset about what Ollie shared publicly, but he cannot and did not say that Ollie said something publicly that he had not told to Tyler.
Right.
Those are different things.
Yep.
To be upset that it was shared publicly is one thing. To feel like you found out something from the manager's public comments that you didn't hear from him yourself, that's a totally fair reason to be upset. That's not what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler can say that he wished it would have been handled internally. I'll say this, Ollie wouldn't have taken it where he took it and doubled down on it had he not felt like there were things that were not getting through to the player. I don't think that he would do that. I also think that there have been other little things they've seen with Tyler this season that have looked like a guy who, I don't think he's dogging it. I think that's a very elementary way of describing it. I think, and he described this in his comments to you guys after the game, that
he's trying to stay healthy,
stay on the field.
Yeah.
But you can't play this game worried about getting hurt. You can't do very many things with your brain in the place of self-preservation. It's not a game that can be played that way, and it's not a game the Cardinals want to play that way. Tyler did his preparation this offseason to stay healthy. Part of keeping him healthy is how they use him and when they play him and how much and what they ask of him. It's partly why I don't like him playing center field.
Yeah.
I think there's more of a chance of him getting hurt out there. But you can't let, as you're rounding third base, trying to score a critical run, be the time when you're thinking about, what do I have to do here to play 160? You have to be thinking about, how am I going to score the run? And it's different when a guy, you know, it's not, I know that he compared his trip around the bases to the MLB average. That's not what we're talking about. He's one of the fastest players on this team, if not the fastest. Him using that skill is a huge weapon for this team. Him scaling that down or trying to pick and choose when he plays that way, it's not going to fly. And I think that's the message that Ollie wanted to get across loud and clear, and I think it's the same message that he shared with Tyler. What interests me most is kind of this, in some ways, this agreement to disagree. Like, they're not going to see eye to eye on this.
Mm-hmm.
And in O'Neill being so kind of outspoken about his displeasure and how this was brought about, I do wonder, how does that play out and what does that look like? Is it something that goes away and a month from now they say, hey, that was a scrape that made them better? It could be. Or is it something that it becomes a thing and we won't know that for a while?
One of the things that to your point, so StatCast had him around 28 gone the bases on Tuesday night, and he averaged closer to 30. That's an average. Now, he's a bolt guy. Mitch is the figure that they give for full speed. He's an elite speed guy. So, yeah, there was part of it. I was often told, and I'm trying to think as you were talking about the right analogy, you know, you load management takes place before the game, not in the game. There's no real way to play for a high mileage cruise control. you know, if that makes sense. Like, you can't, you can, like, obviously we've seen players measure their how much output they give. We see that all the time running to first, right? And sometimes that frustrates fans, sometimes that frustrates teammates, sometimes that frustrates, you know, managers. We've seen that. But there is a bit of a monitoring going on there. There's also a real measure on their regard for how likely it is that they're going to be safe, right?
Well, that's the Ali, that's the
Yadier Molina
counter. Yeah. Well, Ali never yelled at Yadier Molina when he didn't run hard to first base. Fair. Totally fair to bring that up. One, he's a Hall of Famer. There are different rules for Hall of Famers. You don't have to like that. That's just the reality. But more importantly, too, Yadi's sprint speed when he's trying to run hard and his sprint speed when he's not trying to run hard, they're barely different, and he's going to be out in both instances.
Right.
The better analogy would be you know, Yadi not trying to block a ball in the dirt when he's very good at that, and it can stop a runner from advancing. We didn't ever see him do that until the very, very end when, let's be honest, he wasn't playing the way he had played for years, and it was his last season. It wasn't good then. And if Tyler O'Neill was a future Hall of Famer who was rounding up the end of an epic career, I don't think Ollie would be calling him out for not running the bases as hard as he possibly could. So I there are different things there. Tyler O'Neill's speed is one of his greatest strengths as a player. And if he's going to be, you know, pulling up short on a fly ball in center field that drops in front of him or not, you know, busting it on the bases, then he's not as good of a player. He's a good player when he's healthy. He's not a good enough player to play worried about his health. And that's not a knock on him. Very many players aren't. Most players cannot play well as they can when they're trying to conserve something or trying to hold something back. You do that, you take care of that stuff in the training room, you take care of that stuff in your off-season prep, you take care of that stuff in how often you start and what they ask you to do. But when you play, you got to play. And I think John Mozeliak nailed that in his comments to Jim Hayes on the Bally's pregame show. Is like, the Cardinals have a way they play, and they expect guys to play that way when they're out there, and the team's job is to not put them in spots where they're hurting themselves by being asked to do too much or overworked. But when they play, there's a way that it needs to be played. And if you're going to set that tone, setting it in the first homestand of a season is probably the right place to do it.
The Yadi example is noteworthy for another element of it, is who's the alternative if he's not playing, whereas the question, if Tyler O'Neill's not in the lineup, who's the alternative? The Cardinals have a whole slew of options, and that is part of this,
right?
Is the performance of the outfielders so far. One of the more interesting comments that I, you know, heard from all of this was Marmol saying that he enjoys competition and that this has opened a window. Dylan Carlson had a window closed on him. I don't think there's any other way to put it. The Cardinals wanted Jordan Walker. Jordan Walker earned a chance, and the way for Jordan Walker to be in the lineup consistently was to have somebody else, Nupar or Tyler O'Neill, play center. And so it really came down to the fact two players had their roles on this team upended by Jordan Walker having a strong spring and earning a spot on the opening day lineup. Those were Juan Yepez, who is a right-handed batter, plays outfield, and was sent to Memphis. Again, one of the guys who provided some of the few runs the Cardinals scored in the postseason. And Dylan Carlson, who became something of a late-game matchup guy and sometime starting center fielder. Marmol made the point in spring that that's how it was going to open, that Tyler was going to get a run in center field to see if he just ran away with it. Because they didn't see enough reps, they didn't see enough guys there because of the World Baseball Classic. But that at some point in time, Dylan was either going to be their answer to any pitcher coming out of the bullpen, their trap for the three-batter minimum, or he was going to take over as center field. They feel like the defense is pretty close. I think there's continued evidence that Dylan is a step above defensively in center. So is this the gap that he needed to maybe reassert himself?
Yeah, I think Lars could be a good center fielder. I have never loved the idea of Tyler O'Neill playing center field for a few reasons. One, I think there's no evidence on this. I've had, you know, talked with the Cardinals about this and said it seems to me like that's more injury prone of a position, and they say, well, actually, you look at the data and there's not proof of that. So I'll acknowledge that. It feels more risky to me asking him to cover more ground for a guy who has had some injury issues, and also he's been a very good left fielder to the tune of 2 Gold Gloves. I don't see him having that touch, that feel in center. The argument could be that he needs to play there more to prove it. Cardinals had moved away from him playing center field, so for them now to all of a sudden go back, to me, says more about what they think about wanting to play Jordan Walker every day than what they think about Tyler O'Neill's center field capabilities. And if there's somebody there who can outperform him, then I think they would be open to that. But I think Carlson and Nootbaar are both better center fielders based off the fact that we've seen them do it more often lately. That tells us something. And I think Carlson has had moments where he's looked very good in center field. With Dylan, it's the point of, like, just go take it. I mean, I think that's really where Ollie feels about all of these guys. I think he felt that way, feels that way about Tyler too. Is like, just go take it. Like, he'll continue to play them all, and there'll be guys every time the spotlight turns toward one where the narrative is that he's down on somebody else, and that's not. I think he's trying to actually talk against that. Even if after these comments about O'Neill, it's like everyone's going to look at somebody as someone's being punished or someone's being, you know, in the doghouse, when really it's what a competition is. Different guys get different cracks to grab it. Once again, an opportunity for Carlson with Nootbaar on the injured list and O'Neill, at least for now, you know, having to work his way back in the good graces of the manager, go take it. Mm-hmm. Go shut the door or attempt to lock it. I mean, but he's had that opportunity before. I mean, he had that opportunity after Harrison Bader was traded, and we've seen him reach for the handle, but never slam it. And once again, the opportunity is there, so go take it. I think they're seeing some good things from him, and not quite to the level of Gorman, and you know, to some degree, you know, Alec Burleson, where they gave them a plan this offseason, they came in and they're just nailing it. But they're seeing some positive developments from Dylan that they asked him to work on this offseason, and they're encouraged by that. And now the encouragement that he's given them and the opportunity that O'Neill has opened up, it's once again a chance to go run with it. But at what point, if he doesn't, is it, you know, enough? Or is it that's not who he can be? And I don't want to go there because he's still so young, we forget. But he's also had a lot of games now. Mm-hmm. He's played a lot in the majors. He's had a lot of at-bats. So it feels like this season is the time for him to grab a role, because the churn is real. Mm-hmm. And O'Neill is not going to be out of it forever, I don't think.
Yeah. The question that I wondered is, if the outfield is all at their best, is Dylan in it?
I don't know that. I mean, I think, yes, it could be that way, but I don't know that he has convincingly proven yes or no. I think he's teased at that, but, I mean, you could also sit there and say with some of the things that Lars has done, the second he's back, that you're better off with an outfield of Lars, Walker, and Nootbaar, or Lars, Walker, and O'Neill, I mean. Mm-hmm. So I think that opportunity is there for Dylan, but I don't have a conviction on that one way or the other. Right now, I think it's a bunch of guys, and you know, they're begging someone to make it definitive.
Yeah, I mean, if you're ranking the outfielder's performance on the super small sample size theater of the first week, don't you have Walker, Burleson, and Field?
Yeah, I think you do.
Or Dylan? It might be Dylan.
Dylan would be closer to that group than further away from it, but Walker is the most encouraging, most consistent, not necessarily just defensively. He's had some rookie moments out there in the outfield, but he's hitting, and now he's hitting home runs. So,
well, he hit a home run.
He's hitting home run, singular. Yeah. But by the time you listen to this, who knows? Maybe he'll have another one. He's the kind of guy who's going to hit one, and then it's like, oh, okay. And now he's going to go hit on this road trip. He'll go out and hit two more. I mean, that's just... Mm-hmm. Someone in the chat the other day was asking, like, he's hitting a lot of balls on the ground. Does he need to adjust his swing? And I'm like, no, he just needs to play, man. He's got like a 330 average as a rookie. never playing in Memphis. He's gonna be, and he's killing the baseball. Like, he's gonna be all right. He's gonna figure it out.
He's hitting the ball really hard, and sometimes it's low and on the, you know, and sometimes it's on the ground, and also sometimes it's hit so hard that it doesn't matter whether it's low or on the ground. It's a double. Then, you know, yeah, a hit in every game he's played. He gets his home run against Atlanta. Told a story the other day. I was talking to him. He said that Turner Field, which is where he went a lot as a boy, said he probably got to about 70 or so games there. But it was 5 minutes from his church. He goes, you go a half a mile on the interstate, and you're there. And I talked to his dad, and they were saying, yeah, the seventh inning, you know, they'd get up from their seats after watching some of the game and go to the mini ballpark that they had there for kids, and Jordan would go and rake, and he'd go hit the balls over the fence. And Jordan said that that was so much fun that he thinks that that's where he started to fall in love with baseball. You know, you see the game, you see Chipper Jones, his favorite player, you see the action on the field, and then you're able to go and recreate it, and not only recreate it, but, you know, have some fun hitting the ball over the mini fence while you're doing it. And then here he is doing it live. He got the baseball and got it right to, he's going to give it to his dad. Do you think, what's reasonable to expect from him here? What's reasonable? Is 330 reasonable, Ben?
I think it's reasonable to expect him to perhaps win the National League Rookie of the Year. I mean, he played against a guy today in Atlanta who was a superstar rookie for a good team who hit down in the order but had great production and was just remarkably steady for a young, talented, rising player, and Michael Harris. And why couldn't Jordan Walker do that? So I think it's very – I think it's – I wouldn't say it's a disappointment of a rookie season if he doesn't. But I think the kid's the odds-on favorite in Vegas for that, for a legitimate reason. Mm-hmm. He's here from the jump. They did the right thing by putting him on this team, because if you would have waited until, you know, if Lars Nootbaar goes out with a thumb injury and now Jordan Walker is promoted and he has to be the answer to a player, it's a lot more pressure. Mm-hmm. I think they did a smart thing by, in some ways, decreasing the pressure by putting him on the opening day roster. It sounds counterintuitive, but I think by not waiting for him to have to be...
No, they want him. They don't need him. There's a difference. Like, they want him on this team versus if he were coming up to replace the Tyler O'Neill, yeah, where it's like, oh, all right, we need him.
And I think the way they're hitting him in the order, he could climb. We could see him hitting second at some point this season, but I think they're handling it well, and I think we're seeing more the kind of hitter he is against major league pitching that counts than we did at spring, where he was clearly swinging to try to make the team. He's already kind of changed his at-bats a little bit, which I think is really encouraging. He's going to hit home runs, but that's not all that he can do. And I think we're just seeing him start to figure this thing out. So what's a fair expectation? I think he could very well wind up being one of, if not the best, rookies we see in the National League this year. I think that's fair. I think asking him to be an all-star in his first season is a lot. I think putting certain numbers on him is a lot. He's going to play a lot of games. He's going to get a lot of at-bats. He's showing that he can find ways to help his offense, and I think the power is the next thing that's going to pop, and if he continues to do that and he stays healthy, then I think he's probably a pretty easy pick for NL Rookie of the Year.
Cardinals go 2-4 in their season-opening homestand. They win the series against Toronto, a team that's expected to contend for the American League East title and one of the playoff spots in the American League. And then in comes Atlanta, which is widely regarded as one of the best teams in the National League, certainly one of the best teams we saw last year, and they've gotten better in ways. Olson looks like he's a lot more comfortable with
Olson
them.
Made that Busch Stadium look like that field that Jordan Walker used to play at the Braves games.
So did Austin Riley. Austin Riley hit a ball that hasn't landed yet. The Atlanta put on a clinic and swept the Cardinals. And what stood out from that is the Cardinals have to answer the same question we were asking all offseason, have been asking for multiple seasons. And yes, they can diminish it as a small sample size, but at some point in time, it's the same merry-go-round, and that's starting pitching. The first innings have not been kind. They had the odd start where it was broken bats and bleeders and bloops and stuff that added up to 10 hits against Miles Michaelis in the opener. And it was odd that Jack Flaherty walked 7 batters and had 8 base runners without allowing a hit. But he found a way through that. But each and every time out, they've had these truncated starts. And it, particularly against Atlanta, it was home runs early. I mean, they gave up damage early. If the Cardinals are going to contend, it's going to have to be through pitching, because it always is. And what is your level of concern after seeing this first week, this first time through the rotation, with their first division series on the horizon?
I think it's the biggest weakness on this team, and I think we knew that. It's not second-guessing if we all offseason pointed to there's one thing other than a catcher that can make this team stronger, that can help the bullpen by a trickle-down effect if you boost the rotation, and I think we're seeing that play out. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you have a number of turns through the rotation where it's fair to really start looking at, okay, what is the profile of this rotation? I'll give them a little grace because it's Florida to St. Louis, and it's the first two returns of the rotation, and it's two really good lineups. We always know that hitters are usually quicker to launch than pitchers, usually at the start of the season. We're seeing some uncharacteristic things across the league, like Max Scherzer getting shelled by the Brewers. I mean, a lot of guys are hurt, so I want to be fair here. Yeah, the rotation's a concern. It was a concern. It's been a concern for months. And we were all told we were being alarmists because we were suggesting they needed to boost the rotation. I feel just as confident today that the rotation is a concern as I did before. Do I feel even more confident? I don't know. I mean, I think if they click and a couple weeks go by and they start to iron out some of these numbers, they could be a good rotation, maybe just a mediocre plus one. They're not good enough to be a damaging postseason team. But can they be a good enough one that earns a postseason-like upgrade at the trade deadline? Are they going to need help before then? I think that's going to be the question now in this first half. I ran the numbers after the sweep. So rotation-wise, through 6 games, the Cardinals have the National League's worst rotation ERA at 7.14. You've got the worst National League opponent average. Opponents are averaging 341. Against them, and they've allowed the most hits, 42 of any rotation.
42 hits, and they're abbreviated. And Miles Michaelis is the first one to get a second out in the 6th inning. So it's not just 42 hits. It's 42 hits in few innings.
And it's not 42 hits only of the quote-unquote soft contact that the team is talking a lot about.
Well, Austin Riley has some thoughts.
There's some ouch contact in there, too, and some balls flying over the fence at a ballpark where that usually doesn't happen. So I think that's a legitimate concern. But I don't know, like, is it 3 turns through rotation where you feel like it's fair to say, okay, this is who these guys are? I don't know what the magic number is, but it was a concern entering, and it was the number one thing this team could have done other than getting Wilson Contreras that would have made them a more potent team, and they passed, and right now they're taking punches in part because of that. I'll also add this, though, and I think this is fair to – we have to point this out. Some of the guys who would have been available are not pitching. Justin Verlander is on the injured list. Carlos Rodon is on the injured list.
Quintana.
Jose Quintana, who I kind of felt like if you're not going to add somebody, why not just bring him back? Well, he's out and going to miss a significant amount of time. Ironically, DeGrom is the one guy who's not hurt. So go figure. And we'll see what happens with those guys. Like, the fact that they're hurt now doesn't mean they're not going to be helping their team, you know, pitch their way to a postseason or beyond. These guys won't be out forever. But it does speak to the fact that good starting pitching is a risky thing to go spend a bunch of money on. It's a hard thing to develop, and right now the Cardinals didn't do either. they haven't developed elite starting pitching, or they've developed it for other teams and regretted trading it away, and they haven't find, you know, they've been cautious about paying for it, in part because they were worried about how a guy like Carlos Rodon holds up, and now they can say, well, we were right about that. We had some concerns. But A, where's he going to be in 3 months? But also B, that still doesn't answer the need.
Right.
So you could be glad maybe that you didn't spend some money on a guy who's now starting the season on the injured list, but you can't be glad looking at the first turn of this rotation feeling like the reason that you have a 3-game losing streak is because you didn't pitch well enough.
Did you see anything in this first slate of games that you're like, okay, that's an encouraging sign for the rotation?
For the rotation.
Because if I ask about the bullpen, you're going to say Drew Verhagen and Zach Thompson. And I wanted to kind of, you know, maybe throw you a curve there.
The fact that everybody's healthy is good.
I mean, Jack finding his way through it all, like downshifting on velocity okay, I gotta find a way through. I can't push harder, and then find a way out of that. I mean, you know, part of what the problem that they've had is they have this cascade effect. I mean, it is a concern. If not for the off day, what the rotation had done would really leave them vulnerable for Milwaukee. Here's a real news flash. If that continues in Milwaukee, they're going to be super vulnerable going to Colorado, where if you have exhausted your bullpen and now all of a sudden you're having to play like kind of like scramble to even patch the other innings, you'll be very vulnerable in Colorado because of what happened in the Milwaukee series if the starters don't give them something. So for him to find a way to at least provide innings there and not have them have to stretch, that's something. But it feels kind of what's Pyrrhic, right?
Yeah, it just feels below the standard of what he should expect. I mean,
right? There's a standard, we were told, and it's below the standard.
When we asked the top dog, Bill DeWitt Jr., at winter warm-up, why didn't you guys go get a top-level starting pitcher? This rotation needs one. Mm-hmm. And his response was, well, if Jack is healthy, then he can be that guy. So maybe that's too much to ask of Jack. Well, we're going to find out this year, mm-hmm. but, you know, you're not complimenting a top-level starter for finding a way to stay on the mound when he's walking everybody. That was a performance that was, to me, it was almost more frustrating because it showed you that Jack should have been attacking those guys he was walking. Mm. Like, and that's what this staff is not going to be the best in strikeouts. They're not going to be the best in ERA, but they've got to attack guys. Like, they've got to stop nibbling because they've got a great defense and they've got an offense that's going to score runs. They got to throw strikes. And you kind of just, if this sounds like deja vu, like it is, because what has happened at the past couple trade deadlines, they've gone out and been like, we're going to go get starters who throw strikes. Like, that's got to be the team-wide emphasis now. And this idea of, like, if you get ahead 0-2, like, maybe you try to get them to chase one, but then go back at them. I mean, they can know what's coming. Doing damage on it, getting a hit past this defense is still hard. But I really think that there's this sense of like, okay, you get ahead. Okay, now chase. See if they'll chase. Attack them. Bear down on them. This rotation can make up for what it lacks in stuff or, you know, elite proven fear factor with just getting after hitters and making it uncomfortable on them and making them have to try to get hits past this defense. And they should, I wrote about this earlier this week, like, they should hate walks. And that should be something that has guys lose jobs this year, whether you're in the rotation or the bullpen, because they're not going to remarkably wake up one day and be like, go strike out 10 guys. That's not what this kid's going to do. But they got to throw strikes, and they got to stop missing so much middle. Like, that was the one thing, like, with the Woodford start. All the stuff we saw him do at spring that looked really good, everything was up. And that can be excitement. It could be nerves. Matt's was kind of like that, I think, maybe a little over-amped. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see the location of some of that stuff get better in the second starts. And if it does, then I think they'll get some better results.
I like the description that you gave of the football that bounces the wrong way. I think it'd be really good because as many things as you hear the Cardinals yell from their dugout, like with Turner Ward going charts every time they have a line out. You know that I think it would be interesting if every time they got to a 3-ball count, you know, Dusty just shouts poison. You know, every time that would be, it'd be something.
Make shirts. I mean, make it a thing. Not that, call it something else.
Yeah, put Mr. Yuck on it. Like three ball counts with like a Mr. Yuck face.
Something that's like, okay, three balls, make them earn it. Mm-hmm. And keep the ball in the ballpark, yeah. Mm-hmm. But throw competitive pitches with three balls and preferably don't get there.
Yeah, don't get there. That's what Dusty, that's how Dusty put it. He's like, why get there? Yeah. You know, and he was like, this is a race for two strikes. That's what he kept telling them all, yeah, you know, race for two strikes. And he goes, why do you have to come back from a three ball count? Why get there in the first place? You know, similarly with the hitter, like why have to find a way to have a two strike approach? Why get there in the first place? So, yeah, you can kind of see that. I think what stands out to me is the early trouble in games, and you go, okay, you're right, how many times through the rotation is enough to judge that? Well, is one time through the rotation, if they all have the same kind of rickety start, is that enough? Is that enough to kind of go, oh, okay, is there a warm-up thing? I think it's caught my ear that a couple guys have said they've had to change their approach. Now, Atlanta got on them fast, and it's not a shock if Atlanta has a good scouting report to go with good talent and can jump on a team. We've seen them do that. We have seen teams do that, especially exceptional playoff teams, do that against the Cardinals. So what is that? Is that that the warm-up has to change? Is it that the approach has to change? Is it something, you know, like, look, Woodford didn't quite get the location with the four-seam fastball. But then when he went to the sinker, as you said, he was aggressive and he got outs. Similarly with Matz, where he was able to kind of tune in, but he shifted his pitch usage. So is it they're slow to adjust? Are they wrong to begin with? Or is there some blend of both that could be ironed out before that first pitch of a game begins? And is that something that they have to look at? I wonder when it's right to kind of, and this might be the time where it's right, or certainly you go up against a Milwaukee team who also knows them well. You see some of the same things. Might be the time for the Cardinals to ask that internally, is what is it about the beginning that is causing problems? Is it the preparation? Is it the scouting? Is it the plan? What is it?
Yeah, and start to sift through, okay, what are the themes? Well, here's the themes that we see right now. Adjusting to the pitch clock, two really good lineups, new catcher.
Yeah,
yep. Which I think you got to mention there. And I thought it was – and I'll give Steven Matz a lot of credit. I liked what he said the other night about, yeah, the two times I shook Wilson off, I gave up home runs, which that's a – because you know people are wondering, like, well, it's a new catcher. Mm-hmm. It's not Yachty, a great game caller, a guy who knows these guys really well. Could some of this be the pitches that Contreras is calling? And perhaps it's location, perhaps it's pitch selection, it's game planning. I think it's probably a little bit of everything, but I also think I can understand why the Cardinals are trying to push back a little bit of a reading it into everything as a trend right now, because I think what they're having more of anything right now is they're missing some location. Mm-hmm. And that can be feel coming out of spring. That can be, we'll know 3 months from now if guys hate or love the baseballs, or if they feel like they're different. That story always comes out about a month into the season, plus or minus. So I don't know. Nothing jumps out to me glaring right now other than that they're a pitching staff that's going to have to be on their game to be good. Mm. Like, and right now they look loose, and they look a little, I won't say sloppy, but they don't look dialed in, and the lineups they're facing are. I mean, that – we kind of keep circling back. It's not an excuse. Like, if you want to play deep into the postseason, you got to beat these teams. Mm-hmm. And we know that these teams have two of the best offenses that we've seen. So, in some ways, I think it's good because the Cardinals are used to starting a season and mowing through the Reds and the Pirates and, you know, feeling like, oh, they're really good. And they've gotten kind of punched in the mouth here, and now it's going to be about how do they respond.
There are times where a team falls behind early and it kind of goes, okay, well, like they're in quicksand, right? Like kind of play. It doesn't feel like they're like a low motor. Even like with some of the pepped up pace of games, there have been some times where it feels like it drags on a little bit. Some of that has to do with the, I mean, the Cardinals did have a lot of hits, you know, against Atlanta in the one game. They're 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position. So it was like a lot of action on the bases, but not a whole lot of fulfillment with runs. That can make a game kind of bogged down. Most of all, though, it's the falling behind early, and it feels like they're always playing catch-up. This offense has shown well, though. I mean, with the exception of kind of the final game, they've done pretty well racking up the hits and showing off their depth.
I think the lineup should be pretty good. I like the way it's constructed with your 3-4-5. I mean, the best news of this opening homestand was that Wilson Contreras isn't going to miss a bunch of time with that
right.
knee. And that looks good, and I like the flexibility of being able to cycle some guys through the other spots. And I love Newt Barr at leadoff. We talked about that down at spring training. Brendan Donovan at leadoff, I think that's a really good fit for what he brings there. He, to me, has been one of the most encouraging storylines. I think Nolan Gorman has been very impressive, continuing what we saw in spring. So I think the lineup has been encouraging, which is yet another reason for these pitchers to get after it and throw strikes. And because you've got a team that can put up some runs and a defense that can make it hard to get hits. So I think the lineup has been good, and it's you can see the dynamic of it. You can see how it can shift over time in a good way if a guy like Jordan Walker continues to do what he's doing and starts to add some of those home runs. And you can see how it can kind of toggle for handedness. It's the kind of lineup that we've often said, why don't the Cardinals have a lineup like this?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when they go face the Dodgers, and whoever starts has their own – whatever starting pitcher the Cardinals put out faces a different Dodgers lineup, and you're going, my God, where are they getting all these guys? The Cardinals are trending towards something like that, and we're not talking about this being a weak bench is what I felt like has been a constant – or not a constant, but a pretty routine topic in recent years.
So to bring us back to where we began, do you think it's at all a point, a pivot, at all a delicate choice that Ali Marmol made with being public about Tyler O'Neill this early in the season and how the clubhouse could react to it? Do you think that's even a thing to be aware of?
I think it probably shows in some ways the stress the Cardinals are facing to start the season.
Tyler O'Neill brought that up. He said, you know, you're down 0-2 in a series. You know, you can kind of feel the frustration. I thought that was, again, a comment that spoke to, like, okay, what is he saying there? And this idea that, like, you're talking about, like, there is pressure on them. So does that – could a clubhouse crack?
Well, I think not just in this series, but you look at going now play Milwaukee on the road, go to Colorado where things always get crazy. You got to go play the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium by the end of the month.
At the end of a three-city trip through the West Coast.
We called it a stress test for a reason, and so it doesn't shock me that we're seeing some signs of stress. But I'll say this specifically about the question you asked about O'Neill. I don't think Ali Marmol says what he says if he does not sense that there was frustration in that dugout, in that clubhouse, with some of the things they were seeing. Mm. You've got, in that same game, National League MVP Paul Goldschmidt running his tail off trying to beat out a ball to first base. When you have the hardest playing players in the league in your clubhouse and they're also the best players in the league, it gives a manager a lot of leeway to say, I'm going to push you harder. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, no one can turn around now and say, well, how can he push me harder? There's Paul Goldschmidt kicking his feet up. He doesn't do that. Nolan Arenado doesn't do that. And those guys have standards that they don't want everybody to have to meet them in terms of their production. They know that they are capable of doing more things than other guys. But I do think they expect guys to meet them in terms of their effort. And, you know, Paul Goldschmidt, when he's barreling down to first base, is not thinking about, what if I'm going to be a little sore tomorrow? He's thinking, I'm going to be safe, and I'm going to do what I can to help my team right in this moment. And that's how you have to play this game.
Yeah.
You can't have an angel on your shoulder saying, go run hard, and a devil on your shoulder saying, what if it hurts you later? You can't play like that. Mm-hmm. It's a hard enough game as it is, but you have to play it, as the Cardinals repeated today, full throttle, or you're going to get caught in between. And I think that's where Tyler was on that run, or on the bases. He wasn't being lazy. He wasn't trying to hurt his team. He was caught in the middle. He was thinking instead of playing. He was thinking, okay, how can I do this the safest way? And you can't play like that. So I think the clubhouse, you know, look, everyone's going to have an opinion on should it have gotten out, should it not have gotten out. I don't think the clubhouse has any misunderstandings of what the standards are. And I think they also understand that if they feel like the standards aren't getting met, then they know they got a manager who will address it with them first, but also not be candid about addressing it publicly either. So I don't see that becoming an issue. I think Ollie and Tyler are going to have to patch things up or whatever they need to do, and we'll see how that plays out. I don't know. It's a tough thing to read right now because it's just happened, and they're kind of talking back and forth at each other a little bit. And we'll see, I guess, how now things respond to Tyler really in some ways getting the last word of saying that Ollie shouldn't have handled it that way, mm-hmm. which I don't expect Ollie to address that. I'm sure he will with Tyler, but that was not lost, that Tyler kind of finished his comments with a little critique of this wasn't handled the way I thought it should have been. Mm-hmm. I thought that was noteworthy, and I'm interested to see how that ages.
It's interesting. Well, like, what's the alternative there? How does Marmol answer the question about that moment, which was pivotal to the game, where we all saw what he also saw, and go, is he hurt? Like, that was the first thought. It was like, he eased up there. Is he hurt? Now, does he score? Does Ronald Acuna throw him out? I mean, it's a lot closer play with Tyler at full speed, but also there were two outs, so it's got to be a better jump. Like, there's all those elements to it. It's not just full speed around the base and home, where it was like, well, is he all right? It's also like the better jump with two outs. But I'm really eager to see, like, okay, just how. Well, I'm not eager to see. I'm eager to know, like, what's expected. Like, what should the answer have been the manager giving cover for him or not answering a question? What's the alternative then to say, yeah, I had an issue with his effort? What's the alternative?
Oh, I mean, I guess what some managers would have done was they would have hashed it out between the two of them, and O'Neill would not have started a couple games, and everybody would have said, what's going on with Tyler? And, you know, they would have made up some, well, he tweaked his, or they could have made something up, or they could have said coach's, manager's decision.
They would have covered for him with a lie.
It would have been the worst kept secret as to what happened. I mean, that's kind of what I go back to. I like to know what guys think, and I like it when they're candid, so I'm not going to then turn around and be like, well, they made a mistake being candid. And we know how Ollie operates. He's been very clear about this. He will tell the player what he thinks, and then he will decide if, when asked about what happened, what he wants to share. Mm-hmm. A player will never be surprised by what he says because they've already heard it from him. Now, again, Tyler didn't like that he shared it, I guess, and they can talk about that themselves. But I don't think Ollie – I don't mean this like as an Ollie being – disliking Tyler O'Neill. I don't think Ollie cares if a guy doesn't like that he shares that, because I think he's making it clear, like, that's the standard. It's black and white. It wasn't met. I still like the guy, but he's now opened the door. I mean, he laid it all out. Mm-hmm. And I, for the sake of understanding what's going on, I like that. I guess other people can analyze what's best for a team, but it's not new for this manager. He's been very clear. You're going to know where you stand with me. If you have questions, ask. I'll tell you. You may not like the response, but it doesn't mean I don't like you. Mm-hmm. And he's also we've seen him challenge other guys and then come around. I mean, there were times last season where you would have thought, like, Jake Woodford kicked Ollie's dog with some of the comments that he made about him. And now, you know, he's saying, look, he did all the things we asked him to do, and he didn't dislike Jake Woodford then, and he doesn't like him now. He liked him both times.
Yeah.
He's liking what he's doing, and he's liking that he's taking what they're suggesting and going with it.
There's a difference between liking and rewarding and playing.
Right.
Like he can
does he like him, or does he like him?
Right.
And like, no,
he can like a guy and not play a guy.
Yeah. He likes his players. He gets frustrated by them at times, but he also is going to hold them all to a place of, like, there are certain things that are non-negotiable, and if they are not met, there will be reactions. There will be consequences, and he's got no problem just laying that out as a chart and saying, okay, here's the deal. And some guys prefer it that way. Mm-hmm. We've heard just as many players say, well, I like about Ollie is he lets you know where you stand, and there's never any gray area.
Right.
And you can also like that some days and not other days. That's that's life, right? Yeah, yeah. So I think it's I think it's something that O'Neal could respond to this in a good way, or he could respond to it in a bad way, and now that's what we wait on, is what's the response?
You know, Ollie, in his conversations with us, has wanted blunt questions and promised blunt answers. Well, not promised, just delivered. I mean, he has said, I'm going to be direct with you guys. And there's been times, to be honest, when he goes, I'm not answering that.
Yeah.
And that's completely fair. And he does it in a way that you can't really reverse engineer what the answer is, which was something that, like, in talking with Mike Matheny, he would say, if I give you a no comment, you're going to reverse engineer why I won't comment, and then you'll know the answer. And it's like, man, you are, like, you're, I appreciate all the credit, but sometimes you just say no comment, or you run the risk of being caught in a lie, and then we just write that you were wrong, and which we had to do. You know, so every manager has to make that choice. I'm gonna mislead about injuries. I'm gonna mislead, or I'm gonna not say anything. And I think there are times, honestly, in fact, I know there are, when Marmol will not answer something that is rather innocuous. I think that, you know, like, well, I'm not gonna talk about that, and it's like, okay, well, now we don't really know where to go. But he, if he gives an answer, intends to be direct with it and wants the questions to come in the same way. So in that case, it's like, were you okay with what you saw from Tyler O'Neal? Not like, hey, was there something up with, you know, I mean, it's wet out and you offer all these qualifiers. He'd much rather just go, you know, were you all right with Tyler O'Neal? I bring this up in a conclusion, just to kind of, well, to kind of give a window into how Marmol operates as a manager, which is direct and honest, is what he says. You're going to get honest from me. You're going to get honesty from me, and I expect it in return.
It's the same thing that people praised him for when the change happened from Shilt to Ollie. And Shilt and I, Shilt was funny because Shilt would have the hard conversations with the guys, and then he would, like, wrap them in sugar paper and try to give them to us. Mm-hmm. And he got killed. I mean, he just got killed for trying to, like, explain everything away. When you, everyone assumed that's what he was doing when he wasn't talking about it publicly, but it wasn't.
Right.
And Ollie, I think, is smart for being like, no, I'm going to talk to the.
You're talking about a guy who lost his job because he was blunt.
Right. I mean, Shilt actually should have used more sugar tape when he. Is sugar tape a thing? I feel like it's like, I think, like, fruit by the foot. Like, yeah. It's like how you give, like, an animal medicine. You put, like, the pill in a piece of peanut butter. Like, that was like Shilt in the post games. And Ollie's just like, no, just take the damn pill.
Right.
And it's the same pill I gave to the player. So now everybody, no one is mad because everyone's getting medicine.
Yeah.
And then, like, and it makes. To use this warped analogy, it makes when he hands out candy sweeter because you know it's genuine. And
right.
It's not like, and he, how good did Jake Woodford feel at spring? Because Ollie was like, he's doing everything we wanted. This is what we wanted to be. Rock on. He's a starter. Like, go get him. I mean,
that, you can believe him genuine. When he says, I want you on this
right.
team. When so, he goes to Jordan Walker and say, you've struggled, but you've given us everything. There's a gravity to what he's saying. Because you know he's been honest about the criticism.
And if it was a thing where you felt like he was anti certain guys or had guys on his bad, like, and I don't, we've actually seen guys that we could have said, well, maybe he just doesn't like him. It's actually, they've gone back on the other side. And I think what the reality is he just wants guys to do what he wants them to do. Their standards, they're set. He knows guys have different ceilings than other guys. He's not asking guys to go do things they can't do. But he wants them to do what they're capable of doing, and he wants them to do the things that are those boxes that have to be checked every day. And I think he saw a talented player who was in his head and was not using his skills to the best of his ability. And he said, "We got to stop this now, especially because we've opened up a lot of opportunities for this player. And there's got to be a message that's sent. And it wasn't just that one play. And to get back to the clubhouse thing, every single player in that dugout had to have had the same reaction we did watching. What the hell was up with that?
Yeah.
It didn't look like Tyler O'Neill.
No.
And if Tyler O'Neill's not going to look like Tyler O'Neill, then Tyler O'Neill can't be your locked-in, everyday starting center fielder. If Tyler O'Neill can be that guy, but he's got to play like Tyler O'Neill. And I think that's what this whole thing boils down to. Don't change the way you play. You've done a lot of work this offseason to stay healthy. We will manage you in the right way. But don't go play different. The way you play is why you're getting this opportunity.
What strikes me about this, and talking with Nolan Arenado this past winter, he talked about how one thing that he feels that he's now in position to do and that he kind of owes the clubhouse, I don't know if owes the right word, but he wants to give to this clubhouse now that he's going to be there for a while, is find that place for him as a leader. You know, not everybody leads the same way. Not everybody has the same style of leading. Not everybody leads like Yadier Molina did, or leads like Adam Wainwright does, or leads like Chris Carpenter does. All three of those guys led differently. Not everybody is as vocal. Paul Goldschmidt is an example of that. But he can be vocal at times, especially when he's with his teammates, as kind of came out with the Team USA, right? Within that realm, he can be vocal. He's going to be less so publicly. And Nolan was talking about trying to find that voice within this clubhouse so that he could be a presence as a leader. And he's doing some of that, you know, texting and talking with some of the younger guys, talking to them about, like, how he had to learn how to kind of get a regimen going and go through a long season, like things that he can kind of relate to. He's found that way of connecting to the young guys. Again, Goldschmidt leads in a different way. I was talking with one of the players during spring, we were talking, and he said, are you going to get to the question about what we're going to be like without Molina and Pujols? Are you going to ask? Because I can imagine that that's where this interview is going, is what are we going to do in a clubhouse without those two guys as the kind of fixtures? What's this place going to be like without Yadier Molina? For a long time, the Cardinals would take pride in the fact that the clubhouse would police itself, that standards of quality of play, standards of excellence, standards of effort, all that stuff would be handled within the clubhouse, and that this is a lesson that is learned early on, because what it takes to win is taught at Class A, and what it takes to win is reinforced at Double A, and what it takes, you know, on and on. It's a whole Cardinal thing that they have going, and they talk about how that goes from level to level, so that by the time they come to the majors, they are appropriately lauded in the industry for having young players ready to contend. Not just like play, not learn, but ready to contend. They don't learn how to win. They are ready to win when they get to the majors. And part of that is because of the what is described as the accountability within the clubhouse. All of that is for me to get to the point to ask you, are we seeing a bit of a shift in a sense that what policed that this time and who may be coming, you know, that presence is the manager? Are we seeing a little bit of a shift here?
Perhaps. I think we'll see if other examples come this season. We saw it last year with Bader. It just didn't get as much traction because Bader agreed.
Bader handled it. Yeah.
and he addressed it. And, you know, we never saw it from him again. We didn't see him take an at-bat that had frustrated him and then kind of jog down the first baseline. And I can remember briefly the same conversation at the time where it was immediately the reaction was, how dare Ollie question Bader's effort energy? He's one of the hardest playing guys in the game on this team, and he usually was. And what did Bader say? He was right.
He waited around to apologize. Yeah, like he waited there and was not going to leave. He waited for all the meetings to be done, for the office to clear. He wasn't going to walk away from it. And then he had his moment with Ollie, walked into the office, and said, I'm not leaving the ballpark till I apologize for that.
And he fixed it. Yeah. And Tyler O'Neill gets a chance to pinch hit today. Ollie's not holding some massive grudge against him. I think Ollie doesn't want to be like the daily grader of effort and energy. And I think but if something doesn't look right to him, he's not going to ignore it. And he's going to hit it as only he knows how to do, which is head on. So maybe it was something that he felt like he wanted to set a tone more early in the season. The Bader thing happened in June. Maybe it's something that he feels like if there's nails that need to be tapped in and secured down, now's the time.
Well, the outfield like production is part of it.
I think that I don't know as much as he views it as like a void of leadership or accountability in the clubhouse. I think he just views it as that's part of his job, and he is not afraid of ruffling some feathers because he feels like the right response to feathers that get ruffled can be a good thing. And he likes that. He likes a little rusty nail to it. And maybe that's it. And, you know, Yachty could be that. And maybe he is kind of, in some ways, the manager and at times going to have to be the guy who scrapes things around a little bit and kind of what does a rusty nail do? Agitates? I mean, yeah. I think he's willing to agitate some things in order to hopefully inspire the response he wants. And he's serious about wanting to see how guys respond to adversity. He loves that. And I think if Tyler O'Neill goes on a tear and hits a bunch of home runs and starts laying out in center field and making good plays, then Ollie would love that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the thing that I think is fans might get a misread on. They think, oh, now he doesn't like him. He doesn't want him to go up on Wednesday and hit a huge pinch hit home run. That would really make him look bad. No, I think Ollie thinks he would love that.
Yeah.
And he would love it if Tyler O'Neill responded and said, this lit my fire.
I think we're about to find out a little bit more about the clubhouse in both of the realms that we're talking about. One, what are the players who pulls Tyler O'Neill aside and who talks to him about how to react and how to push back or push back with his play or what he does. And the other part is, on this road trip, Adam Wainwright's going to be back in St. Louis throwing bullpens on the injured list. And if ever there was a time for us to find out about like what a rotation is going to be like, not performance-wise, but cohesion-wise, it's after a really rocky start and off on a road trip without Adam Wainwright there. Are they all going to be there for their bullpens? Are they all going to be there helping each other through? Is that team within a team that he inherited and has maintained, is that going to continue even through this turbulence? And if it's not, I think we're going to learn a lot about like the direction, the compass that is going to point this clubhouse right here, right now on this road trip.
Yeah, pull it together. There's got to be someone doing that. And it can be the manager both ways, too. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see the next time we see Ollie and Tyler with the manager's arm over his shoulder. And then, I mean, like, he's got different channels that he can use. And he's got different volume levels and different – but it can't all be the manager either. You're right. A lot of this stuff comes from within, and it's one thing to be a great player, but you've got to do other stuff off the field if you want to be the kind of the nucleus of a team. And this team has one true nucleus left as a player, and open auditions this year for whoever wants to be next.
You're part of our nucleus there, Ben. You're part of the post-dispatch core, the core group.
What's the thing that powers the mitochondria, the RNA? I feel like I'm like the RNA.
Yeah, okay.
The hard-working ribosomes.
The protein? You're the protein. You're the protein of the post-dispatch.
I like that.
I don't really want to discuss where that leaves me. This has been quite a... Now all of a sudden we've spilled into like high school, what, biology, right?
You're like the cytoplasma. You're like...
Oh, yeah, no, that's exactly what
like
it...
Like the
ectoplasm.
You hold us all together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone...
Without you, we're just floating adrift.
True.
And we don't even have... Because we're animals, we're not plants, we don't even have cell walls, so we'd really be adrift.
You kind of are like describing me like a stapler. I hold things together.
No.
And I'm pointed.
Like the desk.
Great.
Great. All right. Well, this has been
You're trying to write without a desk? Oh, yeah. We've been at spring training before.
Yeah, I have.
It
yeah,
sucks.
You're right.
It
I
sucks.
Have. Yeah. I've written it. Yes.
You're sturdy.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Much appreciated.
Kind of smell of rich mahogany.
That's Ben Fredrickson, sport columnist at the Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. You can find all of his work there in the pages of the Post-Dispatch and online at STLtoday.com or on the mobile app where he has stuff. He also hosts a chat every Tuesday. He also holds a podcast every day. He also is in videos three times a day. So you can see him all over everywhere. There is the Post-Dispatch. There is Ben Fredrickson. You can find all the Constant Cardinals coverage at STLtoday.com. There is already a news story about Marmol's comments and O'Neill's defense of himself and his effort, and there's a column there from our colleague Benjamin Hockman. The best podcast in baseball is part of a group of podcasts that the Post-Dispatch offers. Tom Timmerman hosts a soccer one. You and Dave Matter host the
Mizzou Eye on the Tigers podcast.
Excellent. And there is also Netfront Presence, which is our Hockey Writers podcast. You can find all those at STLtoday.com and wherever you get your podcasts. On iTunes, you can find the best podcast in baseball. You can rate and review it. You can subscribe to it there. Please subscribe because subscriptions make sponsorships possible, and sponsorships make this podcast possible. And I recognize that I have some catching up to do to reach the weekly quota of the podcast. So onward and upward and more regularly, you know, from the road here. So Ben, thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome, and here's my suggestion. Tyler O'Neill hits a home run in Milwaukee, and you know that video where the guy, you everyone see that video of the kid who slow motion walks his way from third to home? He does that during his home run celebration. I think it would just break the tension
and
a little
bit. Pop Warner walks over and tries to nudge him.
Shakes him off. Shakes him. Yeah, I think that would be, and then Ollie like has like a pretend stopwatch on it, and then like everybody can laugh, and we can just move on to the next mini saga drama that plays out.
Yeah, there'll be another one. By the way, Paul DeJong starts a rehab assignment, just unrelated, completely unrelated. Paul DeJong starts a rehab assignment at Class A Palm Beach here this weekend. This has been the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Talk to you soon.